Portfolio Construction Forum presents Douglas Isles, February 2017.
Wall Street has failed. Wall Street has let its clients down. And we are all part of this Wall Street machine in some extent. Wall Street has failed to impart a simple message to Main Street. That's its clients, that's our clients, and that's your clients. And as simple as it sounds, and as underwhelming as it sounds, all I want you to take away from today is a simple message. Buy low, sell high. That's it. Four simple words, but the most magic of bullets. And yet we know from industry surveys, we know from looking at the behavior of our own clients, that the biggest driver of mutual fund flows is recent past performance. This is in direct violation of the golden rule. It leads to investors buying high and selling low. Wall Street sells outcomes. Our industry communications are all about outcomes, and I believe that's the start of our problem. The world is probabilistic. Brexit, Trump's election, they were both coin tosses. And yet we spend an inordinate amount of energy on forecasts, on tips, on predictions, on expert comments, on short-term league tables. We put halos around people who've recently performed well, even though luck is more important than skill in the short term. The lucky get luckier. Capital is attracted to them. Their businesses grow. They become more visible. Their opinions become more validated. And yet the surveys show us that experts' predictions are no more useful than dart-throwing monkeys. And they're rarely checked after the event. So what use was there in all the predictions, the top picks of 2017? Did the world stop momentarily when the fireworks went off? Do we have a small, discrete period to focus on? I think not. So Wall Street takes your client's savings, presents back abstract concepts, charts, graphs, numbers to your clients who probably didn't enjoy mathematics, and then champions some guy who rolled a whole lot of sixes. Outcomes can be measured. The problem is we cannot know what fund managers would or could have done under the infinity of alternatives. But Wall Street likes what it can measure. The proverbial strategy of picking up pennies in front of a steamroller is measurable, it's profitable, and it's low risk until it's not. The GFC was a shock because it didn't fit in with Wall Street's models, but it was entirely predictable if we think of the excesses that went before it. So outcomes are easy. Processes are hard. They're dull. They're not exciting. It's very difficult to set ourselves apart when we describe our process. We pick stocks and manage risks. He buys quality. She buys growth. He likes value. You're top down. He's bottom up. How do we set ourselves apart? So what we could do instead of describing our process, we may choose to use an example. Now, every fund manager will have their own favorites. But if you indulge me a moment, let me talk about our largest holding in a company we've owned for almost 20 years, Samsung Electronics. So rather than describing our process to you, I might choose to illustrate our process through explaining Samsung Electronics as an investment. And then its batteries blow up. Have I blown my credibility? Do you hang around? Do you stick with me? Do you wait for the 30% return that we've seen in that stock since that event? And given it's only 3% of our portfolio, does it really matter anyway? So where do we go if we want to buy low and sell high? Well, one place I recommend you avoid is Australia's most dangerous place, the barbecue. This is where your clients are at their most vulnerable. And I think if you think about us as human beings, we're innately social beings. We have this deep desire to be connected. Facebook has probably exploited this better than anyone. They have over 1 billion people going online every day, checking up on each other, trying to be liked, trying to outdo each other. And at the moment, it feels like trying to comment on every comment that Donald Trump makes. But the flip side of that is that we feel social exclusion as much as we feel physical pain. I saw this firsthand recently. My 9-year-old daughter wasn't invited to one of her good friend's birthday parties. It was very upsetting. Social proof and liking are two of the six key tools of persuasion. We want to do what other people are doing. We like to be, we're influenced by people that we like. So be very wary of the friendly salesperson. But this barbecue, it's a terrible cocktail. You're surrounded by people you like. You're surrounded by people you agree with. People who have often strong opinions, not generally people who work in markets, but people who tell you only too readily about their latest successful investment. And you'll probably leave with this horrible sense of FOMO, the fear of missing out. But the herd mentality is at the core of behavioral finance. It's this innate desire for social acceptance. Every one of us wants to be liked. Think of our evolution, think of tribes, think of safety in numbers. It always paid to fit in, not to be an outsider. And crowds can be wise. So think about Millionaire, the quiz show. When the audience is asked for their opinion, they tend to get the questions right. But that relies on diversity of thought. As we tend towards groupthink, we tend towards one opinion, the crowd can become dangerous, the crowd can become mad. Now, when we think of markets, there's a theory, the fractal market hypothesis, and what it basically does is it measures and it explains the extent to which there's consensus in markets. Markets become very, very dangerous when there's a strong consensus. They become very fragile. And I think a way to explain this is to use the analogy of the avalanche. In spring, we know that accumulations of snow can be very dangerous. What we can't know is whether there will or won't be an avalanche, and we can't predict what specific snowflake would trigger that, even if we were to be able to ascertain whether there would or there wouldn't be one. So when we think about that in markets, we can identify when markets are fragile, but it's impossible to identify the specific piece of information that would change the market's direction. But what you'll find in the melt season is there'll always be someone who comes into the bar at the end of the day who's done an adrenaline-fueled, dangerous, off-piste adventure. They have a sense of invincibility, and they make the more risk-averse amongst us again feel like we've missed out. So strong consensus are dangerous, and when we have a strong consensus in market, it pays to try and find out the other opinion. Try and see what the alternative is. The media can be very dangerous here, and Kerr Nielsen touched on this at Market Summit. But if I was to give you one piece of advice, you will learn more from getting other people's opinions than from speaking to those who agree with you. When I looked at Facebook leading up to Brexit, I was told by my friends it could not happen. It was economically irrational. A few months later, that same group of friends told me that Donald Trump was unelectable. I didn't even see or hear the other argument. All Facebook was doing was it reflecting back to me my views through the views of my friends that I choose to follow and I choose to watch more and more. Just imagine the shock if there'd been a big barbecue on Wall Street on November the 9th. So buying low and selling high would be easier if our friends were doing it. But they're not doing it, so why is that? And the reason they're not doing that is that our responses to external events are hardwired. We are hardwired to survive. We're hardwired to pass on our genes. We're not hardwired to deal with investment markets. Now, behavioral finance is not shiny and new. It's more accessible today than it has been in the past. It's maybe broken into the mainstream. But it's one thing to know the theories. It's one thing to know about the biases. It's another to put them into practice. The crux of classical economics and why it's not applicable to markets is the entire theory, or all the theories, are based around this rational human being, someone who maximizes profits, someone who maximizes utility. Think of the last time you bought a handbag, a pair of shoes, sunglasses, a car, or even stocks. Were they rational purchases, or did you let your emotions rule? So dealing with information is hard. And today, as we've heard, there's more information than there's ever been before. We're being bombarded with information. And when you think about what markets are aggregations of vast amounts of information. No wonder it's difficult. We struggle with a couple of things. We struggle with first impressions. We put too much weight on the first thing we see. It's great for likable salespeople. We also put too much information on recent information, the recency bias, which is great for the person who's just rolled a lot of sixes. And it explains why in the immediate aftermath of September the 11th, there was a noticeable drop-off in the demand for flying. So the way in which information is presented to us, the order in which information is presented to us, the framing of information is critical, and that can be very much manipulated. There are lies, damned lies, and statistics. So we ran a live experiment last year at 10 venues. We met with investors and we met with advisors. And at each of these events, we gave half the room a positively framed questionnaire asking them about the opportunities that they could see in global markets. We gave the other half of the room a negatively framed questionnaire, and we asked them what they thought the risks were in global markets. Those with a positive questionnaire forecasted a market return of 6%. Those with a negative one predicted only 4%. We also struggle with time, which is ironic because time is our biggest ally through the compounding of returns. But our linear thinking, our extrapolation, it keeps us in this linear world. We tend to overemphasize the change that we'll see in the immediate future. We underestimate what we'll see in the longer term. We can't cope with exponential growth. But the best example of this is Moore's Law, the idea that computing power doubles every couple of years. This is a relationship that has held for decades. It explains why, when my grandfather ran a life insurance company in Scotland in the 1960s, he clubbed together with two of his biggest competitors to buy a mainframe. And it explains why today we all carry the world in our pockets. That's the impact of 2 to the power of a lot. And it's surprisingly predictable. So what computers are doing for us today may be exciting, but it's predictable, it's not surprising, and it's not accelerating. The tech boom, for all its excitement, for all the amplitude, even that could not convey what we have in our pockets today, but it's been set in motion for 50 years plus. This passage of time forces us to deal with change, and it forces us to deal with uncertainty. And as human beings, we don't like change. And the world is probabilistic, which makes it hard for us. Companies are living things. They evolve. They change. We can't control them. Analysts are much better served focusing on the real world than burying their heads in spreadsheets and trying to really triangulate information from multitudes of sources to work out what other people are missing. So try explaining to your clients that good companies don't necessarily make good investments. That's a difficult one. But I think a better way to think of markets is to think of the Keynesian beauty contest. John Maynard Keynes came up with a proposition that rather than entrants trying to choose who was the most beautiful in the parade, their job was to choose who would be voted the most beautiful by the other entrants. And often that's how market works. We get rewarded for predicting the change in what people think, other people think, about the companies we're looking at. So it's not easy. But not easy doesn't mean not possible. We can build a framework, but we know from the ill-timed flows that most people don't have the right one. And in order to do that, we first have to understand loss aversion. We feel pain more than we enjoy pleasure. We don't like our losses. They weigh on us more than our gains. And it's been measured to be in a ratio of about 2 to 1. Explains why many people will shy away from a fair coin toss, which unfortunately is what the market is on a daily basis. And barbecues, the media, tickers on most websites, tickers on buildings, they bombard us with the results of the daily market coin toss. And that's not good for us psychologically. That creates anxiety. Even 3 up days in a week do not offset the pain of 2 down days. Even if 3 up beats 2 down, it's a good outcome. So you'd think my simple piece of advice to you would just be turn off the noise. But that's not possible in this world we live in today. We're connected 24/7. If I told you all to eat less and exercise more, would you do that? I hear it all the time. I never quite get round to it. So all I'm trying to say to you today is very simple. Buy low, sell high. You're hearing me say it, but it's a difficult thing to take away. So let's look in other disciplines. What do athletes do? Athletes train. They build muscle memory. Every top cricketer, every top golfer, every top tennis player, they have played the shot again and again and again and again. But markets in the short term are not predictable. You can ask me what I think the markets will do in 2017. 7, 8, 9, 10%. I would probably answer somewhere between minus 30 and plus 50. Honestly, I have no idea. We don't know how the sentiment is going to change. So given that it's so wide, what should we be doing? We should be thinking about what could happen in both directions and what we might do when that happens. We can prepare our own muscle memory in the way that sports people do. We can study the markets. We can study other disciplines. We can study economics. We can study philosophy, psychology, science, history. We can look at what our competitors, what other practitioners are doing. We can learn. And perhaps some of the books that I put up on the screen could be helpful additional resources for you if you want to pursue this further. We can study crowd behavior. We can study the challenges of dealing with complex information. We can study ranges of possible outcomes. We can look at historic data. We can revisit booms. We can revisit busts. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's probably been written about. It's probably been studied. But we can make sure that we go away and learn. We don't have to predict what is going to happen in markets. We have to be prepared to react. If you're a cricketer, you can only hit the ball that you've been bowled. If you're a tennis player, you can only return the service that you actually receive. So what I propose to you is that we can build a framework that relies on understanding change, and it relies on understanding change in two dimensions. On one dimension, we can look at changes in the real world, and on the other dimension, we can look at reactions in the markets, changes in the price. And remember, the game is already in play. There's no start line. This is already happening. So what we then have to do is we have to react when one changes by more than the other, the real world or the markets. And it's important here to be flexible. People have the tendency to be stubborn. They have a tendency to hold on to their view. When things change, be flexible, be open-minded, be willing to change. So here we have the matrix. It's 2x2. There are only four things that can cause us to have to take action. That is when there is an over or under market reaction to positive or negative change in the real world. So let's look at an example, top left. There's a negative change, there's some bad news, and the market overreacts, the market panics. We might not think of that as exaggerated demise, and we might want to check whether or not this is an opportunity to buy. Similarly, in the bottom right, we might have a positive change in the real world, perhaps a change of government, and there may be an underreaction from the markets. In that situation, we might want to see if the growth has been underappreciated, and again, it's an opportunity to look to buy. Now, I believe we can win with this framework. I believe we can learn how to behave in this way. We can practice. We can prepare to make losses. We can embrace them. We don't have to put extra emphasis on them. We know this is going to happen. We know there's going to be ups and downs in markets. But this still looks like something out of Wall Street, so it's still maybe too much to stomach at the client level. So we can go one step further. We can simplify this even more. We can look at one state where things are better or where prices are higher than we think they should be, and we can look at a situation where prices are lower than we think they should be. You can use my matrix before to assess which of these conditions we're in. But it's very important because you need to have a very different mindset in each of these environments. When things are going well, think about the harvest. Think about the good fortune that you have. Take advantage of it. Look for things to sell. When things are not so good, think of the Boxing Day sales. People queue up, hordes of people queue up to get a bargain when it's material goods. But when it's in the ownership stake in a real business, we seem to have an aversion to it. So when prices are cheap, look for things to buy. And that's it. It's quite simple, really. Buy low, sell high. But it's harder than that because you have an instinct, you have an urge. So when things are going well, not only do you not feel like selling, you probably feel like buying more. So I just urge you to try and control your instincts, try and fight your instincts, almost try and do the opposite of what you feel like doing. Now, I'm not saying that Platinum has got it right 100% of the time, but it's something that's been embedded in our culture since day one, both as investment managers and in communicating with our clients. We have tried to explain to clients the pitfalls that we face. And that is what phenology boils down to. So my challenge to you all today is to shift the conversation. Try and use this simple message to help your clients. As advisors, explain it to them. teach them, coach them, train them. Try and take away the risk of emotional responses wherever possible. Set up savings plans, automatic rebalancing. Move from an emotional to a prepared response and use the framework. Wall Street has failed. Please speak to your clients as human beings in their language, not our language. Accept that they struggle with social pressures and that they struggle in dealing with information and with time. And as underwhelming as it seems, I just want to leave you with four words to take away today to share with each and every one of your clients. Buy low, sell high.